This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Kia ora te whanau. Lovely to have you out there with us this evening. Welcome to the AA Live radio show. This is the show that explores the ideas behind a way of recovery through Alcoholics Anonymous program. Thank you for joining us out there tonight around the motu, and I know there's a few people around the world as well, so wonderful to have you here. I just want to say a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a fellowship based on alcoholics helping other alcoholics in recovery. So through a 12-step program, we support each other and learn how to live life on life's terms. And I have to say, some hard mahi out there, isn't there, guys? Hey, now I've got two wonderful guests in here today. I have got Sue. Welcome.
Kia ora, Sue here.
Lovely to see you. And we've got a lovely guest tonight. David, lovely to see you.
Kia ora.
Right. Okay. Let's talk about it. I think we'll start with a preamble tonight, actually. Can you do that for us, Sue? Because that's going to give our listeners a little bit of an idea as to, yeah, the basis of Alcoholics Anonymous.
All right. So my name is Sue. I'm an alcoholic, and I'll just start with the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Wonderful. Thank you. And I'd just like to say, folks out there this evening, what you hear tonight, what we talk about, these are purely our own opinions. They are not that of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. This is just three alcoholics getting together to discuss recovery. And we're very lucky, as I said earlier on, we've got David here to tell us a little bit about his story tonight. So we appreciate the time that he's taken to come in. So we're listening for the similarities. That's about it, isn't it? And not the differences. So that's one thing we do talk about when we first come into the rooms. It was one of the first things I heard anyway. I'd love it if you could read the daily reflection for us, David. That would be really wonderful.
Sure. I'm David. I'm still an alcoholic. I was an exception, as Paul W. said to me gently and simply, "Do you think that you are one of us?" During my drinking life, I was convinced I was an exception. I thought it was beyond petty requirements and had the right to be excused. I never realized that the dark counterbalance of my attitude was the constant feeling that I did not belong. At first in AA, I identified with others only as an alcoholic. What a wonderful awakening for me it has become to realize that. If human beings were doing the best they could, then so was I. All the pains, confusions, and the joys they feel are not exceptional. They're part of my life just as much as anybody's.
Great, thank you. What does that make your brain go into, Sue? Well, actually, I might ask our guest first. What did you think about that, David?
No, I relate to it very well, because I came from an alcoholic family and experienced it very young and terrifying and all of those things, you know, and growing up experiencing it, I swore that I'd never touch alcohol because of the experience that I had. But working life, I started drinking and, yeah, never went back.
Yeah. It's not fair, is it? It's just not fair.
I don't think about it that way, but, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just part of a life experience.
Yeah, that's fair enough too. For me, you know, it just made me think about the daily reflections as a whole. For me, I enjoy listening to those, reading mine every day. They help me give a little bit more of a thought around, I suppose it gives me a little bit of direction in my thinking and what, where I am in my recovery and so forth. It's just like a little kick for me each day when I read my daily reflection. And sometimes it teaches me something new. Sometimes it tends to send me off and thinking about something from the past that maybe I'd forgotten. Because I still, after this time, have things that pop up in my head. I find it quite empowering. What about you, Sue? Do you find the daily reflection empowering for you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's the great thing often that they're on the little app that I carry around. I have to admit that I'm not like super like efficient and read it every day. But when you do, it gives you that little micro sort of jolt, if you like, back into what your purpose is and how that may help you. And then they do align sometimes with the steps, like 1 through to 12. Mm. So if you're reading through, I guess, September, then that might align itself to step 9. But, yeah, you can take away a little nugget of goodness out of those. And yeah,
I love a nugget of goodness. Number 9, the step for this month is made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. What about you, David? Do you still get up and make sure you do your daily reflection? Is there, not that any of us are perfect?
Oh, there's an array of literature I read, so it's not just daily reflections. I don't always read it. No, there are maybe other things. I need another dimension. I need to be looking at an all-sided approach to my life because it is an all-sided. It's not a one-dimensional thing. Alcoholism is the central point to that, of course, but it's the foundation of my recovery, which entails a lot of other things and readings. I do a lot of meditation. That's what really helps me. Yeah,
yeah, nice. I've got to say, listeners, and all the people that we have in our fellowship down in this area, David and I have not met one-on-one before, so it's nice to have a refreshing, a new person in front of me and for myself. I have to say, I don't know how long your recovery is for. How long have you got?
Doesn't really matter. To me, today is probably...
Yeah, it's one day at a time.
It's always a day at a time for me. I mean, I don't get into the length of time. I mean, it's very important for people to celebrate that, but I'm not of that school.
No, fair enough too. Fair enough. I can understand that as well. Now, I tell you, we're going to have a little bit of music, guys. We are going to dig into, who have I got? I've got a bit of Fleetwood Mac is the plan today. But I just want to say you are listening to the AA Live Show in association with our friends from Otago Access Radio at 105.4 FM. And let's see if we can get something going here. Let me go. You know me, guys. There's always a little bit of something that's going to make me get it happening. Nah, it's not working for me. So I'm going to go for another one. None of my CDs are working. What am I going to do? I tell you what.
Should we panic and find something?
Gosh, no. That would do me no good. Would do me no good at all. And I bought some in today. I've got a bit of Van Morrison as well. But life doesn't want to work for me today. How was your day, Sue, anyway? I know you had work. Were all your people well behaved today while I sort this out?
Yeah. Well, it's Friday, so that was good. But yeah, I've got all my homework to bring home, as you do. But yeah, it's a good day, and I have to sort of share with everyone that, you know, up until, I guess, like 16 months ago, you know, I was pretty at risk even keeping my job, so because of my alcoholism. So I am really grateful that I can sustain what I do and really enjoy it. And I'm sort of back in the game, if you like. And, I'm really, really appreciative that I can be there and be a supporter of what I do.
And so, what's that saying? A grateful alcoholic doesn't drink? Is that the way it goes? Yeah, this music just doesn't want to start for me. So let's chat a little bit more, guys. David, would you like to share us a little bit of your story? It would be really great, I think, for our
as
listeners.
As I said before, I'm originally from Dunedin. I grew up in an alcoholic family. Didn't believe that I wasn't, you know, I didn't want anything to do with it. And when I did start drinking, I was able to be able to twist my personality away from a shy sense of sort of guy to becoming something else, which I thought was the pathway to so-called manhood. And I say so-called manhood because there's a lot of popular myths about that, and adulthood too. And they were able to get crazy. Oh, I was crazy. I mean, like, that was a part of the qualification. If you're crazy, you know, it's great, you know. Because they were crazy days. So.
And, aren't we all a little bit crazy?
Music, you know, it was through the 70s, hard rock and then the punk rock and then all of that stuff and the drugs that went with it. And so that was, yeah, that all just fitted into my life, so to speak. And then I went from there and for a number of years did the same. I think when I got married, that really forced me to look at myself in some ways, because it took a few problems for that to happen in the first place, and reflect on who I was as a person and how I related to other people. But that was just the inkling. From there I went to anger management. I went to men's groups and counselling, but it really didn't solve the problem. I mean, my idea, I mean, I had met people in AA and I had a pretty very, very limited view of that there were religious people and nutters, you know. So, my favourite saying was if they saw somebody drinking, they'd press gang somebody into the organisation. This is the way I used to think, because, you know, I was a bit of a political activist in my day. And yeah, it was. You had some pretty limited. No, I had the opportunity to actually get involved in some assessments with other people at one stage, and it certainly made me look at my own self. But I discussed with people that knew me and said, "Oh no, you've got a problem," but they didn't know me. I mean, you know, there was a double life I lived, you know, and it was very much a double life, and I was crazy. I just and I remember having a discussion with a friend of mine once at work, saying, you know, how come I can't get out of this criminal element? You know, there's a bunch of criminals I used to hang around with, and not that I was a serious criminal or anything like that, but still, it was a lot of the friends that I had were based on using and drinking, you know, and it was just something, it was a dead end, you know. And the thing I often found, I'd occasionally discovered the novelty of giving up for a couple of days was the rationalization of getting back into it again, believing I didn't have a problem. Mm. And my ultimate rationalization was, well, there's only one reason why I drink, and it was to get drunk so I can't have a problem. That's the ultimate square off, yes. That was... But that's okay. I mean, that was all what I had to go through, and what I had to go through, all the pain, and there was a lot of pain. And finally, I get to Wellington because I'm travelling around the country at the time, and a friend of mine, I was looking for another counsellor or some bloody thing, you know. And a friend says to me, well, you know, I used to have that problem, and he never lectured me, because he knew very well if he tried, I would just tell him where to go, you know. But he talked about himself. That's all he did, talked about himself. And he talked about, he said, yeah, I had all those problems, but central to all that, I had a drinking problem, you know. And he started talking with me about it, and I started thinking about it. And I went away that night with a flea in my ear, And I couldn't get to sleep that night. I remember that. And I said, no, I've got to go. I've got to go AA. I think I'm an alcoholic. I'd made my decision before I got to the meeting. And when I got to the meeting, it was an amazing meeting, actually. And this it had such a diverse amount, a lot of people. And I mean, you know, people smoke. The days of smoking still went. And yeah, there'd be people living in the street, ranging to millionaires in that meeting. It was just and that really appealed to me. I like the diversity of people and the commonality of people, you know, because we all have our different stories, you know. But it's the strength of collectivism, which is very, very strong in me, you know, through other things that I've done, which really, really appealed to me, you know. And I started regularly going to meetings. I had to regularly go to meetings in order to make it in the first place. And I went to 90 meetings in 90 days, maybe more sometimes. But I was on a pink cloud at that time. There's no doubt about it. The world had changed to me. I remember having conversations with people and thought, what the hell's happened to you, you know? And I remember I said that somebody said, don't worry, it'll get worse yet, you know, because, I mean, I learned how to stop drinking, but I had to start learning a number of other things. I had to change my life. I would never have made it. I'd tried to give up before, and trying to hang out in the same places, I mean, many times, and it never worked. I mean, it didn't last very long either, you know, and I rationalised how wonderful it was drinking again. So this time I actually had to make some serious changes, you know, and I did too, you know. So going to meetings, you know, I remember somebody saying, oh, you go to meetings and do your program. But for me, going to the meetings in the first place was an absolute essential link to me in meeting other people, going out, and there was a great social. I discovered there was a great social side to that too. I mean, we went out for coffees and all this sort of bloody thing, but you know, and yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it, you know, and that started me on the road to recovery. There's a whole lot of other stories. I moved away 9 months after that to the Horopenua Manawatū, worked up there, and
did you manage to find meetings up there, or did you suspend your meetings, or did you?
I didn't ever anywhere I went, I had to consider support. That's what thing I learned, you know, not to go where there's no support. But it turned out one of the big there was a big meeting in Foxham Beach. It was quite a well known meeting around certain people. I'm not really into the cult of personality. I'm not really into that sort of, because I remember having a conversation with an old timer in Wellington about it actually, and he said, I'm not so much into that. And I was the same. But yeah, they were great. They were big meetings. And I used to travel quite a lot too because I lived in the rural area. And I loved being on the road. So that combined with going to meetings, you know, it was fantastic, you know. And I'd go to a meeting on a Sunday afternoon. It was like going a Sunday drive, except I get the reward of a meeting and meet people and socialise. We used to do some crazy. And there's nothing like a bunch of recovering people get together and that crazy sense of humour, and it can get really up the top. Well, I've got that sort of personality. I know that. You know, I can get a bit silly sometimes, and I'm not particularly worried about that. I thoroughly enjoy it, and I think it's better to laugh than not. A lot of people that are not alcoholics don't understand that. I think, you know, I remember once being told, you know, we're not here for your entertainment. So it's just because I just laughed a lot at life, you know. I had done a lot of serious work too, though, you know, inside and outside. I've been through men's groups. I've been through, the 12 steps. Went to Ham the Springs to do some emotional work. I had to do that because I didn't know how to live my emotions. I learned understanding the steps in my head, and I was told I had good recovery. But there was always something underlying, and it wasn't until I got to Ham the Springs that I really discovered that it was a whole lot of emotions that I'd, like shame was a big one for me. And alcoholic family, being the oldest, so you take on everything, you know, you take on everything with it. And I learned later on to discard all that and made peace with my father. That was a big one for me because I learned that the level of anger and resentment that you hold is can kill you. There's no, so you know, it's not going to help me, you know. And so I came to terms with them. I spent my mother's last 3 years with, I lived with her, looking after her. That was really, really, really important because the same old patterns come up, but I could see that it didn't have the same effect on me, and I was able to discard some things, but also to make peace with her own and a number of other things that, you know, and we could discuss things on a greater, deeper level, although I think she had still had some problems with that, yeah. But it doesn't matter. It was all part of the journey for me, and it is a journey for me.
Obviously, you would have aligned yourself with a sponsor, and did you have a, or maybe I'm assuming things, and did you?
You could be too, yeah.
Yeah, sorry about that. No. I'm just wondering that balance of your own sponsor, individual pursuit and then, you know.
The first sponsor I had was assigned to me because I was too perfectionistic. I mean, I didn't like this person. They didn't like that person. And in the end, the tradition of one group, they said, oh, if you want a sponsor, come and see us and we'll give you one. So I had a temporary sponsor for 2 years, so that was good. And then I had some fantastic sponsors, after that as well, yeah. So that's been a real journey for me. That's all. I could write books about all that, but, I don't need to. I mean, and the things I've learned, you know, I mean, I used to praise people when, one of my sponsors says, well, you can praise me if you like, but you never put anyone on that pedestal, you know. And don't forget, I'm helping you to help me myself, yeah. And that's really what it's about, yeah.
That's so true. Helping each other is so important.
Yeah,
it's the basis of it.
But to help yourself though, that's giving away what you get.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I've been in the rooms with you, David, and especially when I first starting, and you had this great energy. And just intensity about this is so important to you, and then it transfers into me. And that's a great thing about that when you do go to many meetings, or not, I mean, not numerous amounts, I'm just saying specific meetings, you do get that transfers back in, and you just learn so much. And you're right, you're giving it away.
And it's heartfelt for me. A lot of people like gratitude lists and things like that, but to me it's got to be heartfelt and just waking up every day. To me, you know, like for my birthdays and Christmas, they don't mean a lot to me now. Every day is the beginning of a new day, and that is like a birthday. It is a birth, you know, because I'm still alive, you know, and I learned how to appreciate that. I learned that through the first 20 years of meditation that I did as well, you know, that just appreciation and the gift of life is really – that's where it's at, you know. This can add on all the other extras, and I'm a human being like anyone else, but to me, essentially, it's just the gift of life that I have. And sometimes I can be complacent about that. I'm a human being. I'm not a bloody, you know, when I can walk on water, I'll let you know sometime, but that's not going to happen. But, you know, I really have an appreciation of living, you know, and people might find it hard to handle it sometimes. A bit like people when you're having a conversation and you take that opportunity maybe sometimes to talk about the fact you're an alcoholic, people immediately respond, well, I only have 3 drinks a week. I says, I don't really care how many drinks you have. I'm not here for you. I'm not an evangelist. I'm a person that just talks about their own life, and if somebody understands it, that's fine. That's where it comes back to, you know. If they don't, that's fine too. I'm not going to judge them. Some people will judge you, of course, but that's okay. It's just you've got to let it go. Yeah, no, I'm so, so grateful. And that passion comes from the gift of living, and it is a passion. It's heartfelt. It's got to be heartfelt. I'm an emotional – used to think I was an emotional person, but now I'm more emotional than I ever was, and I love that. I mean, that sounds some – I'm not getting into that debate about that bloody logic versus – but I like having those emotions, yeah, and cherish living.
I suppose the difference is too that there was a time when you weren't feeling any emotions. So to discover them is great.
I always had emotions, but the depth and level was a different kettle of fish, you know. And that experience at Hamner brought to me some really traumatic things about my very early childhood when I was about 3 or something. And that sounds crazy, but it probably set the world for me as a very terrifying place. And I didn't discover that, though. I didn't discover that much quite a few years into my recovery. So I don't, you know, It's just when it happens. It's just when it happens. Except, you know, there's no lineage. Some people talk, when I hear your story, like some, you know, straightforward sort of.
Like an index.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, and it doesn't happen like that for me.
No, I don't.
You know, I used to have that in some of the groups. I want to know what your story is. I said, I'm talking about how it's affected me, how I've been affected. That's all. And I don't have any apology. And I don't have any apology for myself. I used to be a person pleaser big time. I was an oldest of the family who felt they got, you know, put down, all that sort of thing. But I don't have to apologize to anyone. And I'm pretty sensitive to other people too. I can be unsensitive sometimes too. Don't worry about that. But yeah, I prefer to get on with people, but I'm not going to go out of my way to, you know, do something else. I'm not a priest or anything like that. So, and that's what I like about AA. You know, you don't have to be an angel or something like, you know what I mean? You're just an ordinary person trying. And that's the thing I relate to. And I relate to people also that are struggling in their lives to make it. And I really, that goes to my heart, that, yeah.
Yeah, because that brings something to my mind, as often in the meetings, people celebrate, you know, their big duration of being sober, which is amazing, no doubt, like 15 years, 16, 20 years. But I might have shared this already before, but for me, it's like that person that's got their 30 days, you know, 2 months, 6 months. There, that for me is, at this stage in my journey, is very inspirational, because I know that struggle is very fresh in my mind. So someone to, or else if they, relapse and they do have the courage to come back in, you know, that's remarkable to me. Mm. Yeah, that's a lot of courage right there.
Yeah, there's a saying I used to hear, that your misery is refundable anytime. And I think you're right. I mean, but for me, it's about hearing the people that want recovery too, you know, because I've seen people going the other way, you know, being resentful and what am I bloody doing here? And they can go whenever they like. We're not here to win anyone. We're not here to recruit people. We're not into that. Mm. We just want to hear people, how they're doing. And if we can be there for them, that's the most important thing. And that's based on love too, you know, in a general sense. And there's a general saying in AA that you don't have to like everyone, but, you know, you can love them in a general sense. You can put the hand out to help others. Mm. And that's what the philosophy of AA is about. And I really like
AA. Yeah, I think that's one of the most beautiful things about AA, because you can just be you, and there's if you need a hand, then you can say, put your hand up, and somebody will come and help grab it. Yeah. Whereas, yeah, like yourself, I was a people pleaser as well, and it's just so lovely to be able to, it's refreshing to be able to sit back and know that I don't have to jump into anybody's hole. It's purely up to them to put an arm up and say, hey, and then I'll help. There's none of that going and rescuing, and I just really enjoy that side of it.
No, it's a good skill. It's a good boundaries are really important. I mean, for all alcoholics to talk about, you know, the things they go through, but it's the relationships with other people that's the big thing, and how they deal with them. Some people are very, very good at you know, dealing with people and working with people and all of those things, you know. You can do that actually without being emotionally involved too, because I know about all that too. But it's really working with people, heartfelt, and feel that, you know, that's the strength to me. And that, yeah, you know, I relate to that. I'm a bit of a softie when it comes to that now, and I'm absolutely proud of that, you know. And
it's
I don't
all about
say that.
Too, isn't it?
Well, that's connection. What it's all about, connection. But I don't, you know, I'm not saying that to, you know, beat my breast or something like that. It's just the way it is, you know. It's the way I see life now, you know. It's the way, and I have an interesting view on life. I'm not going to go into all of it here, but I just love life, you know, and the opportunity to share it with other people. And being in a meeting and telling a story is in itself a really, really important facet. You can't expect everyone to necessarily reflect, because I know what it was like when I was, used to come sometimes and do everyone's inventory in 5 minutes when I come to a meeting. But I don't do that much. I just let it go, because I realised too, I found out that the more you feed your ego, the more dangerously it'll hit you, and it's not very nice. Yeah, yeah. So I try and avoid that now. I'm an avoider, so yeah, I don't.
Well, you haven't avoided anything today. I so appreciate you reaching out.
No, it's all right. No, it's all, that's what was required of me. So I can see that role, and I don't have to show my real self. No, I'm just joking. Because that's what I used to be like, and I can get into any role, and
chameleon, you mean.
And not. Yeah, exactly, and not be, you know, not be really there. That's the challenge, you know. Yeah,
I completely recognise that for myself. My role in hospitality was always an act, and there had to be something. It had to be that person that was level headed and so forth. For me, coming to the rooms was such a relief to learn that I could just be me. It's the most me I've been in my whole life, and I love it. I'm so incredibly grateful for that from the rooms. It's stopped a fair amount of twitching. It's stopped that running around and, oh, that complete control thing. Oh,
it's very tiring, man.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Yeah, yeah. It's really lovely to be able to just step back and say, this will be today what will be. So, you know, you can, like we were talking before the show, you know, here's the outline. I love the fact that I'll just let it flow and we'll just see what comes. Mm. It's the way it needs to be. Mm. It's too many, yeah, I don't know, for myself it was too controlled before I came into the rooms of AA, not just about the drinking.
Mm.
The emotional growth is huge.
Absolutely, yeah, sure, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I've got a lot of lessons to learn still, so, you know, it's good. It's an ongoing thing. It's a, you know, the day I die, and it's a line I walk between sobriety and the other, you know, and it's a straight, you can't get away from it.
No.
You can't get away from it, and if you're not making progress, well, you may be going back. I say maybe. I've heard it used to say you will be going back, but I just say maybe, you know, don't take such a hard line on that now.
Well, there's hiccups, isn't there? You can take a pause.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But you don't, yeah. And that's what we do, especially if there's things happening in life and you sort of, I don't know, my biggest lesson is always get to meetings.
Yeah,
always.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line for me.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, right. If you're feeling a bit agitated towards the end of the day or during the day, it's quite organised to get there. And if you don't have transport and it's in another part of town, this finding that whole network, couple of texts and someone will pick you up, or
well, yeah, and it really does online these days.
Yeah, and that it does really help smooth those edges, especially if you're feeling a bit anxious or all sorts of different feelings. And not to say that it's going to make me go and drink, but it's just like what's a really clear process I can do quite quickly, and that is to go to a meeting or to call another person at AA or call your sponsor or those types of things. And that's, I'm trying to learn how to, well, I am practicing that, and that's incredibly helpful.
There is a condition known to alcoholics, is about irritability and discontent.
Mm.
And that's just a condition. You can be doing a program, all of those things, but it just happens. We're human beings. We're not bloody, you know, robot. We're not read something and all that, you know, everything will just, that doesn't happen. Eh? It's a living, breathing thing. It's, you know, we just, just ordinary people and living the best way lives we can. And sure, sometimes we can overlook some of the things we might have to do, but we're not perfectionists. I used to be a perfectionist in the way that too perfectionist that I could ever achieve anything. That sounds crazy. Yeah, at one stage, I probably wouldn't have believed it, but yeah, I was too much of a perfectionist. Yeah.
Yeah, it almost lines up with that OCD thing. My mother's springing to my head straight away, that perfectionist thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So painful.
Yeah.
It just looks so tiring these
days.
It
is. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Everything's got to be in place.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, that's exhausting. For a joke, crikey, I don't remember like that.
Yeah.
I remember going to Persons, he's dead now, and he invited me over to his place just to look at his place, and walked into this garage, and everything, absolutely everything, was, you know, just set. And I thought, what the hell is my life? When I saw this, and I thought, no, I couldn't. You'd take so much energy just doing it. I mean, it's just crazy. It was, perfectionism gone crazy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it actually, I think, drives you a little bit nuts.
Oh, I think, there's been different experiences on that. Yeah, yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So I'm grateful to be here and just being able to talk about it on the radio and sharing with other people. And it's been good for me. I've come from work today too, and I've been up since about 4 this morning. So I'm a wee bit tired, and I'll catch up with my sleep tomorrow. I'll be happy about that. Get to the meeting tomorrow.
Yep. Right, I'm going to put on some music just so we can take a pause and take a drink and do whatever we need to do. That's, you know, water. So hang on a moment, folks.
By my side in the still of the night, and morning brings forth all its wondrous delight. You couldn't have made it more plain. When I hear that soft refrain, and I hear you gently sigh, I wanna take you where flamingos fly. Flamingos fly. Wherever yonder in the clear blue sky, that's where flamingos fly. Lie in the dark with the sweet sound of the nightingale. Hey! Listen for lark, and I will tell you a tale. Soft winds blowing, blowing outside. I won't take that moonlight ride. When I hear you gently sigh, I wanna take you where flamingos fly. Flamingos fly. Well, over yonder, yeah, the clear blue sky, that's where flamingos fly. Silently waiting for that morning light to shine. Yeah, I'm looking at you, looking at me, and I'm looking at you. And every sign, and I'm looking at you, looking at me, and I'm looking at you, looking at me, looking at you, looking at me, looking at you. I follow the road that will take me back home. Carry that load where the deer and the provincial angel roam. Your happiness touching me now. Unknown where it came from and how, but when I hear you gently sigh. I wanna take you where flamingos fly. Flamingos fly. Way over yonder, yeah, the clear blue sky. That's where flamingos fly. Flamingos fly. See those flamingos fly. You see those flamingos fly. Look over yonder, darling. You take it by the ocean. You take it by the ocean.
I love a bit of Van. That was very cool. We have been having such a wonderful chat here behind the scenes, and we're just talking about work and how we take life on each day as it comes these days, how we're hoping that Sue gets there eventually. But I did just
well, if
something.
If they employ a few more people, it would be great. It's not about my work. it's not about my work technique. No.
God, no, I wasn't questioning that. Yeah. Absolutely not. I found for myself, I don't know about you guys, but as my journey and has continued on, my need for things has lessened. Have you found that at all, David?
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of things I don't attach to now. I mean, there's certain things, obviously, basic things that I need, you know, in life. But I've also learned that not to be to attach to anything, really. I know it sounds about out there, you know, because if somebody who did maybe an examination of my life, they might be saying, oh, yeah, what about this, that, and next thing. But no, I'm not so attached. And I'm not so attached to outcomes where I think it's easy to predict. I had a mind that was a fortune-telling mind, they used to call fortune-telling, where I predicted the worst, you know. And I still need to be pulled up in that sometimes. I mean, but generally, I'm pretty happy in myself, content. It's taken a long time, that can be, don't worry, that can be upset, you know. I haven't ceased being a human being with all the emotions of, you know, just being, whether it's jealous or whether it's pity, whether it's, you know, avoidance, dishonesty, you know, undermining my own integrity. That's something I can do. I realize that sometimes I don't realize it until I look at it, you know. And that's the thing about the program, gives you the opportunity to look at, without sounding too anal about it, look at, you know, what are the motives behind what I do, you know. And I have to continually work at that, because I can let things slip thinking everything's all right, but it'll come back to haunt me later on. I know that for a fact. I've learned that too many times. And I may have been too complacent sometimes, and I've had to learn some hard lessons. But being you know, in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, they talk about doing an inventory step 10, which is a daily thing. I mean, it's based on what you've learned on the fourth step, which is an inventory of your own life, your strengths and weaknesses, all of those things. And just get to see, did I do this right, you know, and the speed at which I may have to apologize for something if I've crossed them really does help me. I mean, it really does help me. I can think of situations where my behavior had been quite intense, and I've put it that way, maybe anger's at the bottom of it, or maybe just vulnerability. But and just the speed at which I make amends by apologizing the way I acted, you know. And that's what what's what living is about. It's not about apologizing for your own existence, because, oh man, I had some pretty screwed up ideas when I first come into AA. I thought I had to apologize for my existence when I first come in. But it wasn't until I got a sponsor who took a steady hand with me, and he said, you said, I know you haven't done this before, but I want you to try these things, you know. And I had to be open to that. And that programs taught me to be open to new things, you know, that it may be very challenging, but that's what life's about, I think, you know. Now, I'm not into, what do you call them, what are those things, that bucket lists. And I mean, it's another ritual. You know, I get yeah, big deal, you know. It's commercialized and all of those things. I can get into that big time too, but I don't. No, I just don't like those things. So I tend to buck and just be a little bit more accepting of what's going on and what can I learn and the enjoyment of living itself, just the enjoyment of living. It's just and I don't have a lot to my life, really. I mean, a quite a simple life, but I carry that with me, and I feel it. I mean, carry it up here. I mean, here. The biggest journey has been from my head to my heart, and that still continues on, you know, and I have to think about that and I have to reinforce that. And there are things that I can do. Of course, meditation is a huge thing, but there are other things that will remind me, you know, whether it's people acting out in passion with others, helping others, or whether it's something sad that somebody's going through. And those are the things that are reminders to be open to and learn about appreciation of living itself. Yeah, so, yeah.
You're getting out of our own way.
Getting out of our own way. Well, is that too? Yeah, I mean, I don't think I have so much of a problem with that these days. I certainly can do that. I mean, I can certainly get in my way, but I tend not to have those sort of things in my life. Yeah, I can beat myself over certain things. It's been a lifetime of learning, so it's not just. But I have let go a lot of some heavy, heavy stuff that I used to carry around with me, and it's not so important anymore. And I stop myself too, you know, because I know a lot of alcoholics and addicts that have gone to that millionth road of beating themselves up, you know. And there are any invention of getting there, you can, you know, the mind can conjure it up, but I tend to just let it go, just stop it, you know, just cut it out, you know. It's not worth it.
Yeah, that's one thing I've really noticed is in terms of relationships with others, especially close old friends and even previous partners and that you're still in contact with and that type of thing, is giving them that space. Like I'm sort of rambling a bit, but in terms of I'm much more considerate. And I used to be like a bull at a gate, like very energetic, which I can still be, which is great. But it's just more like understanding the scope of what's happening, be more patient, be more caring. If I don't get an answer within 24 hours, like maybe think about what was there, but what are they going through? You know, how can I help that? So there seems to be much more things. I don't know if things are taking longer to decide, but maybe my impatience has really dropped away. Yeah, I mean, it's a small thing, but
it's a big thing.
Yeah.
Big thing.
Yeah.
I think.
Living your life at this high frequency, just like, and mine was, not semi panic, but in the end it was, because I was just trying to cover up for, this kind of, this terrible treadmill that I was on, you know, and just. Yeah,
well, and also addiction takes us down a road where we want some instant gratification. And then all of a sudden, when you give up, you realize actually everything can be a lot slower. You don't need instant gratification to be content and feel comfortable with yourself.
That's right.
And so, I don't know, just something popped in my head then. I found myself, I walk so much slower today than I ever did in my life, because I realized I don't need to get there quick. I don't need to race through this life. I'm really loving slowing down and experiencing it.
And you're not trying to fix things. So I think that gratification is based on trying to fix things. And if you think, I work with other people, so first thing you've got to forget about is thinking that you have some control over them. Well, you might have some influence over them, but, you know, people have different motivations. And as soon as you think, you know, I used to think, I've learned in the program ESP, I've worked out what they're going to do and say and think, you know, and that's just, It's a delusional thinking. And it's a dangerous, used to call it the 1-on-1=54 syndrome, you know. And, you know, I've got your motivation, it's all sussed out. And there's a danger in that in terms of, especially between people that are in recovery, whereas they start, you know, doing each other's inventory or something. I don't tell them where to go. Just tell them, get on your bloody program, you know, and this. And that can turn into a form of abuse sometimes, you know, but that's just human beings. Human beings involved with everything is bound, there's bound to be something that's going to, well, it's complex, but it's going to stuff up somewhere, you know, excuse my language. But, yeah, it's we're just human beings. Yeah, we're complicated, you know, and we'll say things. And, I mean, I've said things in principle and then I realise I've been compromised so many times. So, yeah, what's new?
It's interesting because I've been watching an example of that behaviour happening recently, where somebody's rattling, and people have come in.
Like, what do you mean by rattling? Sorry,
just in life.
Okay,
rattling in life. Feeling okay, uncomfortable.
Sure.
You know, just didn't, and I'm sitting back, going, okay, I'll just wait. I'll just watch, see what happens, what you need. You'll put your hand up. But other people have gone in, like little octopuses, and said, let me do this and let me do that. And I'm just watching the whole thing play at the moment and unfold. And it's fascinating because we're not there to rescue.
No.
You've got to have your own journeys.
And there'll be people that want that. People want to be rescued, but it's an endless hole that doesn't go anywhere. I remember
it actually delays their recovery.
Yes. Well, I won't go into generalising too much, but I remember going when I was at Hamner Springs, there was a person there that had been, I don't know, years sober, and she had to come back because she wanted a drink. She kept saying the same thing over. Now, people new into Hamner and new into recovery wanted to cuddle her and all this and comfort her. But I think in the end, they all got sick of it. She kept saying the same thing. And she said, and this sounds horrible, but she says, I want to drink, I want to drink. I says, you go through that gate and there's a pub out there. You can go anytime you like, you know. And it sounded horrible and brutal, but it's the honest, you know, truth. It's not about trying to, because sympathy, it doesn't work. Empathy, yeah, I can be empathetic with other people, you know, but sympathy is a very dangerous, very, very dangerous, and often doesn't work at all. It just fills an empty. It doesn't fill any hole at all, actually. Mm. I've learned that through my family too. Yeah, so I've seen that happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've probably learned that through my family as well. Gotta love those.
Yeah, well, it's all part of it, isn't it, really? Yeah.
Oh, it's all part of it. Unpacking that huge black box that sits at the bottom of my heart. Well, used to anyway. It doesn't sit there so much now. You're listening to the AA Live Radio Show in association with our friends on Otago Access Radio on 105.4 FM. It has been a real pleasure to have you here this evening, David. Thank you
so much. Yeah,
it's been
good. Thank you for inviting me here.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate it. It's been really interesting. You know, and if anything has resonated with you out there this evening, folks, you know, please know that the door to an AA meeting is always there for you to walk through. You know, don't be afraid. I personally, it was a bit scary at the beginning, but the relief has been so huge. I can only recommend it if you're feeling like you're struggling with that. It won't cost you anything, nothing but your time, and you're worth that time. So yeah, there's no membership fees to join AA. You just have to decide you want to give up drinking. So, you know, here's some details. You could ring us on 0800 AA Works, which is 0800 229 6757. You can also get onto the aa.org.nz website. Now, that's got a lot of information on there. It lists meetings, it lists tips, it's got... there's just loads. It gets
it's a goodie.
It's a goodie. Yeah, it's well said. So, aa.org.nz. And as I say, there's that 0800 AA Works line. You'll get another alcoholic who's in recovery talking to you there. So that's also a good place to go. A big thank you to you guys for being here with us
and
this
thank
evening.
You, Jan. Yeah, thank
really
you.
Appreciate it. Appreciate you sharing your experiences and your thoughts, you know. Honest chat. It's so refreshing to be involved in, because there wasn't a lot of it in my life before I came into the rooms. Yeah. So thank you to our listeners for spending the evening with us. I'd like to remind you, as one of the little blurbs of AA, if you want to drink, that is your business. If you want to stop, then Alcoholics Anonymous might just work for you. So those who are already on the journey of recovery, we look forward to seeing you in the rooms. And we're going to finish with a little bit of Fleetwood Mac this evening. Thank you. Take care of yourselves out there. Until next time, mate wā.
Shall I tell you about my life? They say I'm a man of the world. I've flown across every tide, and I've seen lots of pretty girls. I guess I've got everything.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.